It's time for Flames Unfiltered, your spot for Calgary Flames hockey talk.
Points in 7 of their last 10. Are the Calgary Flames finally headed in the right direction? Good evening and welcome to another edition of Flames Unfiltered, hosted by Brad Brood and Kyle Lewis. Kyle Lewis joins us after a little slight hiatus, but good to have you back, Kyle.
Yeah, we'll call it a holiday hiatus, I guess, but yeah, it's good to be back. Good to discuss all the happenings of the last few weeks.
Lots to talk about for the Flames, and the holidays are behind us, and now we're already, just like that, into the new year, and the grind of the hockey season starts. I always look at January and February. It's kind of those months where a lot is determined. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's because it's like the dog days of January, as they're saying. You don't, like, you want the team to perform well, but you also kind of get worried sometimes too. They get too hot this time of year, then peter off close to the playoffs. So it's a good time to try to bag some points, but be interesting to see what direction we're going from here.
We need to be hot though. We're going to get some points here. I'm not super worried, but gosh, I'm not sleeping as easy now as I did last year. Let's put it that way.
How could you? And I mean, I made that comment the last time that I was on the show with you, just about how the last 2 weeks would kind of, the next 2 weeks at the time would kind of tell us what direction they're going in. And I think we're getting a better idea, but it's not crystal clear just yet.
I don't know what to make of this team. We're in one goal games like virtually every single night, which yeah. I know that builds character, creates good habits. But damn it, when you're in these one goal games and that's the way you're geared to play, I'm okay with that. You just got to win more than you lose, and that's kind of been a little bit of a sticking point here in the last month or two. I think it's trending in the right direction, and that's one of the things we're going to talk about today. We're going to roll through all the games that have happened, four of them since we last talked last week on the show, and then we'll discuss some odds and ends, some Flames news, and then with points in 7 of their last 10, have they turned the corner? Kyle and I will go through that, give you our take on that, and then we're going to talk about what we'd like to see change as we come into the new year now. And then, of course, as we wrap up the show, we'll preview the three games coming up ahead this week, and then a trip out to the Central Division, which should be really interesting and really telling. All that today on Flames Unfiltered. All right, Kyle, let's rewind. We're going to go back to the 27th, last Tuesday. Edmonton in Calgary, and we're after Christmas now. We're not quite to the new year, the final battle of Alberta. And I thought this was a great back-and-forth game, and we come out on the losing end of a 2-1 game. But honestly, I was not upset after this game. Were you?
Only because it lost to the Oilers, right?
Well, I mean, I can't. Well, okay, let's put it this way. A couple things were accomplished in this game. McDavid and Draisaitl didn't blow up on us and score 4 goals. So that's a win. And I thought Markstrom took that curse of the Oilers and slammed it into the dumpster this night, because I thought he was really, really good.
Yeah, he was. He was fantastic. Actually, I would argue he has turned a corner. We'll talk more about the team itself, but Markstrom's been much, much better, and that was one of his stronger games for sure. And yeah, like, I like the compete level, like the effort, the back and forth, as you said. It was again, not the result we would have liked, but you can't really complain about a whole lot in a game like that either.
You know, it's we're going to talk about it as we go through all these games. There's been a couple of them where it's like, you know, we come out on the winning end of a 3-2, and then we come out on the losing end of a 3-2, and it's timely goal scoring, and it's goal scoring by the guys we need to score. And some of them aren't doing it. And I don't know that some of them will do it. Is that bad to say?
No, not at all, because in the few games since the 27th, it's been thematically quite similar. We'll get to last night shortly, but that was a prime example of that, of your big guns who need to pot you a goal or two and failing to do so.
The very next night, Calgary goes into Seattle. A very important game when you looked at the standings that night, as everybody was, and still are as we speak today, logjam, just a point apiece, just a logjam for that second, third, fourth, well, actually the third, fourth, spot in the Pacific. And Vladar's gets the go on the second night of a back-to-back, and I thought Vladar was very good. Did you see, we talk about this every night that Vladar plays. It's like, well, he was good.
Yeah, the result this time is he got a win because he hasn't got enough of them based on his play. I mean, he's earned a lot more than he's got. He was excellent. We've talked about him lots. I mean, I'm a huge fan of his, and I hope he gets more starts down the stretch, not just to keep Markstrom fresh, but because he gives us a chance to win.
He does, and that's one thing we do have going for us now that we didn't a month ago, is I feel both goalies right now give us a strong chance to win.
Yeah, there's no issues goaltending. I don't have much complaint about defense. It's scoring depth that's the big issue in my mind at the moment.
This was a real grinded out game. Kadri with a big goal to tie the game mid-second period. And then Jonathan Huberdeau, and this was just what the doctor ordered, a really, really nice goal midway through the third period to seal the deal on a 3-2 victory where Calgary probably gives up more shots than they usually do in 31, but also racks up 44. So some goods and some bads there.
Yeah, it was a good game. I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought the Kadri tip was just absolutely gorgeous. And Huberdeau kind of doing the things that we know he's capable of and haven't seen a ton of necessarily. And especially coming off, like, you know, second of a back-to-back, I mean, you always kind of expect it to be a lot tougher, but getting those 2 points, like, I really enjoyed that game because I'm trying to say, like, I thought that everybody was quite engaged. I think they carried that Oilers loss well in terms of how they responded. And Seattle is, you know, they don't get enough credit for how good of a team they have. They have a surprisingly good record this year.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were starting to fall back a week or two ago, and then, you know, with wins like they had last night over Edmonton and stuff, this team, it seems a fighting team. And, you know, watching Berniers play, he's just so dynamic. And this team's a lot, it has changed a lot since last year, I guess, is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah, and those young players they have a year of experience under the belts, right? So that's one of the variables. You never know which way it's going to go. But, I mean, Seattle's going to be in contention for a wild card spot probably up until March by the look of things.
It seems to be trending in that direction. On the 31st, New Year's Eve, Vancouver comes to the Saddle Dome for a big New Year's Eve battle. And it seems like this is something that's always on the calendar, is Vancouver on New Year's Eve. Markstrom gets the start in net, and Calgary gets off to what I thought was a really, really good start with the Lindholm goal followed by a Coleman goal. A first period was kind of a grinded out back and forth. I wouldn't say either team stood out in the first, but the second was definitely the Flames' way. And Lindholm gets the goal. He's got a 2-on-1, and he just snipes one in. And then a shorthanded goal for Coleman. And Coleman was all over this game. I mean, he was chances after chances.
Somebody, I forget who it was, tweeted and said that was probably his best game as a Flame. And if you watched it with any, you know, any amount of attention, I don't think you could argue otherwise. He was fantastic.
He's been really good. And I thought he was good last night too, but he's been really, really a good player for this team for the last week. And it stood out in that Vancouver game. It was just like, how is he did get a goal, but it's like, how is this? He had chance after chance after chance after chance, and was making good plays. And that line was really clicking. Also good to see Uyghur gets on the board with his first as a Calgary Flame.
Great patience on that goal too. Very simple shot, but if he had shot that, maybe the initial chance, it doesn't go in. I wouldn't be surprised to see him start to pile on a few points. I don't think he's going to hit last year's totals, obviously, at this point, but.
Oh, he had a golden chance last night.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he had to be having a few nightmares last night thinking about that one when he's in his bed. Oh, man, it's a golden chance last night. But those will start to come for him. I do believe that. You know, this Vancouver game, there was one thing that did frustrate me. We're up 3-0, right? Mm-hmm. And this is this time you kind of got to, I don't even know how a way to put this. This probably isn't the politically correct way to put it. But this is when you need to step on their neck.
Yeah, well, the part that bothers me, and this is just me being a pure statistician type I guess, in this respect, is we have no shutouts this year.
Nope.
That's a game where you've got them in the position, you know, foot on the throat, kind of as you just said. You think there's a good chance you're finally going to put a donut up on the board.
I thought about it. I thought, this is a night. This is the night it happens.
Well, and superstitious people say, well, Brad, it's your fault because you just...
I didn't say it.
Yeah. Okay, well, even that you thought it, but I don't buy any of that anyway. I'm the kind of guy that walks underneath ladders intentionally. So the whole... Just that stat, like, what did Markstrom have last year? There was 9 shutouts? Because Kipper's record is 10.
I want to say at this... He had 9 last year. But at this point last year, I want to say he had 5 or 6, and Vladar had 6. Like 2 or 3 at this point last year.
Yeah. So it's a little telling, just in a sense, and shutouts are shutouts, you know, it's a very individual thing, but it can also be obviously team effort, but it's a little telling about some of the defensive miscues, the lack of a killer instinct to close out games, because it was 3-0, as you said. So I don't know, it's, That's just a very basic stat that points to a larger problem to me. It's like, how does a team that had that many shutouts last year, with similar, albeit a couple very different players, but same system, same coach, how do they not have any? And that's a game where it's like, damn it, like, how did this finish at 3-2?
Well, okay, let's talk a little bit about that before we get to the Winnipeg game. Last year, okay, I saw this stat, and when I saw it, I quick screenshotted it on my TV because I was like, it seems so different last year from this year. But when you look at it, last season, after 35 games, we were 18-11-6. Yeah. This year, we're 16-12-7.
It's not that different.
No. Last year, our shootout record was 2-0. We're 1-3 this year. Our OT record last year, this blew my mind. We were 1-6 in OT at this point.
Yeah.
And we were 2-4 this year. Our goals for last year at this time were 108. We have 109 this year.
That makes no sense to me, but okay.
It doesn't, does it? But the problem is right here. The problem's right here. Goals against, 88 last year at this time, 106 mm-hmm. this year. And I'm not, okay, our goaltending has not been as good as last year.
Sure. But our defense hasn't either.
I don't think it's our defense, but I think our defense, I think one of the problems we have in hockey is we take a look at the numbers of goals against. And if it's bad, we point at the goalies and we point at the defense. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at this as a whole team thing. I think good team defense creates offense, but I don't know that we've been there defensively as a group completely the way we should.
Not at all. And that's kind of what I mean too. When I talk about like our defense, I mean, defensively as a group, as a team, I guess I should clarify that more. I don't think our defensive group, the 6 players, whoever they might be on a given night, have been as good as they have last year, partly because the personnel is a little bit weaker with no Shillington. His puck control and foot speed is a huge help. Not the fleetest of foot. A couple of the guys, you know, like Michael Stone's been very effective and not all that quick. But to your point, the team, like, it's a possession game, right? So last year we had the best line in the NHL, and there is no argument to be made otherwise in my mind between Gaudreau, Tkachuk, and Lindholm. So you've got a line on the ice, just an example, that typically has the puck, is driving the puck in the right direction. Well, we haven't had very consistent lines this year, right? So now the puck is more often coming back towards your end of the ice. Like, our possession metrics have got to be worse than last year. There's no way that they aren't. But overall, as a team, there's been a lot of line juggling, relatively speaking, a lot of injuries, because we had virtually none all of last year.
But relatively compared to the league, we haven't heard hardly any again.
That's true. But the fact we have injuries at all is something of a factor. I wouldn't argue it's a huge one.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I can't argue that point with you.
It's just the group just isn't as consistently iced the way that they were last year. You always knew what the lines were. Pretty early in the season, we knew what the lines were going to be. The D pairings were going to be. The D hasn't changed a lot this year, you know, since the beginning of the season. But it's like, okay, who's going to play with who? And that's going to be something else we'll talk about here shortly.
I can partially blame Sutter a little bit, but I can't in the fact that, like, right now, if I was behind the bench, I mean, obviously I'd do a few things differently, but no group together has shown me, like, last year he threw Lindholm, Gaudreau, and Tkachuk together, and it just clicked. And he's like, well, why change it? And rode it all year to great success. Now, I'm interested, and I want to get your take on this. If we had that line this year, would it produce like it did last year? And I'm not discounting and saying that was a bad line by any means. It was the best league and it was the best in the league last year. But And the reason I'm saying this is we had so many players last year have career years. Mm-hmm. And you can't expect to replicate that.
No, and I wouldn't expect that they would have. I would think that it would be similar. I think all three players would be 80 to 100 points.
I don't think
you're going to see two of those guys with over 100. Lindholm might finish in the 70s, for example. So they'd be up there with the best lines in the league again. But, sure. I mean, that year was definitely like, got everything they touched him to go in the net, right? It was incredible.
It was a lot of damn fun is what it was. I mean, and
absolutely, yeah.
And it spoiled up. And it really didn't get going based on the numbers. Tell about this time last year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'm not saying it's going to happen again, but there's a stronger chance that this team's better down the stretch than worse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, again, the players, the team changed a fair bit, especially in terms of how prominent the players brought in are versus those that they replaced as, like, you know, great player for great player kind of things. So Huberto for Gaudreau, or Kachuk, however you want to put it. And then you get a guy like Uyghur on defense, who's, you know, one of the better two-way defensemen in the league. So you have all these guys at key positions that are on a new team. Like, it wasn't just going to click in October and, like, away you go.
Yeah.
And expecting that, and I think some people did expect it because, you know, Huberto had under 15 points in Florida or whatever, right?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I think looking back, I think my expectations were too high.
Well, mine were too in some cases, and also I was dead wrong about some other things. Tyler Toffoli is having a fantastic season.
I think if people rewind back to like episode 135, I think I'll tell you at the beginning of the year that he's one of my biggest concerns.
Yeah, and I said the same thing. I didn't like him as a top line right wing, and he's proven himself to be as good an option as we have, and he's been really consistent. I was dead wrong about him.
He's probably, like, if I asked you, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves, but who cares? If I asked you right now, who have been the best two Flames thus far, who would you say? I know my two.
Well, Toffoli for sure.
Toffoli for sure. And I'd say Rasmus Anderson.
I was thinking, Lindholm's up there too for me because Lindholm has just proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that's like, he's a great player regardless of who he's playing with. And I think a lot of people thought, oh, he's centering Gaudreau and Kachuk. Like, that's where he's getting all his points. Like, he is scoring a plenty, a very, very similar pace to last year, actually. Anderson is on pace to break his point totals from last year.
He started really slow, Lindholm. And it's just really come on. And one of the things with Lindholm is, Lindholm's one of those guys that you watch the game and you never notice him like, holy crap, this guy's out of control good. But you look at the stat sheet when you're done and you're like, Lindholm had a goal and two assists.
Yeah, and how do you not start slow when you lost two all-star line mates?
Right.
Superstar line mates. How could anybody come out of that and just, you know, continue on the similar pace? It would make absolutely no sense. And it doesn't matter that a guy like Huberto had a, you know, the same amount of points as Gaudreau. He's a completely different player. So anybody who gave Lindholm any flack for starting slow, not that I saw much of that, but it's completely unjustified. The guy, it's like your two best friends are gone, right?
Yeah.
It must have been a crazy change. I mean, I'd like to hear him talk more about that, just what it was like to go to camp without those two guys that he had such a bond with on the ice. So
we might hear that at the end of the season. That'd be a great interview.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But he's been great. But Anderson, I just want to touch back on that since you brought it up. Like, the guy is just putting up tons of points in the back end. He's responsible defensively. He's quick. He's excellent at joining the rush. I mean, he's the MVP of the D for sure, if not the team.
One of the things that I've noticed over the last 4 years with Anderson, and I think in his, a younger Rasmus Anderson made decisions more on thinking instead of reacting. Does that make sense? Because you act more on reacting after you feel confidence. And he's gained a lot of confidence over the past 2 years. And it just seems like his decision making is so quick, crisp, and good.
Yeah, and that's just a mark of a player maturing. And they always say it takes longer for defensemen to do so, right? he's always had all the tools and the skills, but now it's like he's thinking the game at a higher level. He's making quicker decisions, better decisions. He's just more responsible at both ends of the ice, and yeah, he's just been great.
Calgary and Winnipeg last night, and a game that, I don't know, a little surprising to me after the game was over. Of course, a 3-2 loss. Everybody listens to the show knows the score. But a lot of negativity last night on social media and on the call-in shows and everything. And I don't know. Maybe I saw something different last night, or maybe I was just in a good mood or so tired I couldn't think straight. I was not that upset after this game. The only thing I said to myself was, the same problem keeps happening, and that is a clutch goal. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen.
Yeah, well, exactly, and I think I texted you about this because it's driving me crazy, but, you know, having Lucic on a line with Kadri and Huberto, you're basically more or less disabling two of your best players to get you that clutch goal.
We're going to fast.
And we've done this before with Lucic, and I don't want to get too much into it because people, you know, we've been there, done that, and we all know how I feel about it, how you feel about it, and most of the fan base feels about it, but he has no business on a scoring line. Absolutely none.
None, and I agree. And you know what? Okay, and so let's talk about that, because I feel the same way as you.
I think that's what cost us the clutch goal that we were hoping for and expecting. I really, really do, because you just can't do that to your best players. They need good players to play with.
You know, I thought Michael Backlund was really good last night, and he gets that game-tying goal. And then, of course, Sam Gagner on a beautiful tip that I'm not fault.
What a season he's having. I mean, let's just touch on that. Sam Gagner, a guy that was always going to be remembered for the 5-goal game he had with the Oilers years ago. You know, son of a great NHL player, Dave Gagner. Like, when he signed to Winnipeg, I thought, man, this guy is still hanging around. Like, I think he played Detroit last. Like, you know, get a 1-year deal each year, league minimum. Good for him.
I thought he was pegged for Germany for sure.
Well, I would have thought so too, but man, he like, good for him. Like, what a revelation he's been. And the Jets themselves, I mean, before people get too down on losing to the Jets, and like, if you look at the standings, you watch that team play, like, they're much better than people give them credit for.
I heard two analysts today on NHL radio say that they would put Winnipeg up in the talk in consideration for the best team in the Western Conference right now.
Well, when you couple that with how other teams that have underperformed, like look at the Blues, they're a game above 500.
Well, look at their goaltending. They have top-notch goaltending right now. Their defense has been really good. And they're getting key scoring from every player. I saw a fact yesterday, and it blew my mind. Can you name the two players in the National Hockey League that have 28 consecutive 20-goal seasons? There's two of them. One's Alexander Ovechkin, and the other's Shifley.
Is it Shifley? Wow.
Yeah. Blew my mind when I saw that. And I think, you know, I look at this Jets team, and this is no slouch that beat us last night. This is a good hockey team. But there's a couple of things that bothered me last night. The Toffoli penalty with 2 minutes and 30 seconds to go pissed me off. Dumb penalty to take. I mean, we were trading goals at that point. This is where we're going to, for the first time this year, I think, going to maybe net one in the final minute. And, yeah, we're sitting in the penalty box shorthanded. I don't know. Those frustrate me. I thought both goaltenders were really good last night. The part that made me laugh, and I almost text you when it happened, was how about when Lucic breaks free in the second period, the end of the second period, and gets like, he like weaved in and out of people. And look like, I don't know, I started laughing. And I knew he wasn't going to finish it because he looked so freaking unorthodox that I can't.
Yeah.
I mean, when my 7-year-old little girl says to me, Dad, how come that guy skates that way?
Yeah, that's pretty telling right there.
I'm like, you know, honey, he looks like he's overweight. You know, he got a lot of miles on those skates. I don't even know how to explain it. It's just not good.
No, not at all. But, you know, this one thing here, I just brought this up while we're talking about it because I think it's really important to mention this. Everybody talks about Cale Makar being from Calgary, being an elite defenseman, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Josh Morrissey.
Yeah.
From Calgary, of course. Listen to this stat line. So Morrissey's 27 years old, okay? He's played in 38 games, 7 goals, 36 assists in 38 games for 43 points, and he's a plus 12. That is absolutely wild. And so people talk about, you know, like the Jets being good or what's their, like, Josh Morrissey, he's going to be in the Norris conversation. He has to be if this continues.
He wasn't even supposed to play last night.
Yeah.
He was sick. Not even supposed to play.
Yeah, wasn't that sick. Had a nice goal, but anyway. But yeah, like, back to your daughter's point. I really, like, that's one of the things missing with this team. When we talk about them turning a corner, there's the ability to close out games defensively. Like, we talked about the win against the Canucks, which was closer than it probably should have been by the final score. And then last night, when you need one of your big guns, ideally, or a guy, you know, and a guy like Mangiapane is a good example because he hasn't had a great year. Somebody's going to pot you that goal, and nobody did. And that's the reason, in my mind, we've seen so many one-goal games that have gone the wrong way for the Flames. It's just they don't have that scoring depth, or I just think that the consistency with the lines has been a bit of an issue. The power play has been kind of good at times, and not so good at others.
Let's look at this. Okay, do you believe they have turned a corner? I mean, they do have been racking up points. We're moving up the standings slowly but surely.
Slowly, yeah. But I like how you mentioned that at the outset of the show. I like how you brought that up like right at the intro, because it's really important to note, you know, how many points they have acquired lately, because it doesn't necessarily seem like it.
It doesn't, because when you're not cheering at the end of the game because of a win, it seems like you're not getting any points. But the truth of the matter is we have quietly gathered a lot of points. And, I mean, I don't know if a lot is probably the right word.
No, but consistently been getting points. There's been no big losing streak. Again, that win against Seattle right after the Oilers lost, like, that's a character win, the back-to-back. Like, there's a lot of good things going on. So to answer your question more pointedly, I do think they're turning a corner, but I think they're doing it very, very slowly.
They're not whipping around the corner. I think they are, too. We currently, as of right now when we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, we're sitting at 43 points. We're in the number one wild card spot. And, you know, let's look at a couple things. A couple things that have changed. Markstrom has definitely turned a corner. I believe Huberdeau has turned a corner. He's got points in 16 of his last 18 games. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge, huge win.
Yep, definitely.
This team is in every game. I cannot. Can you remember the last time we were blown out this year? I don't think we've really been blown out. The last bad loss. I don't know. Was it the 5-2 loss to St. Louis comes to mind?
Yeah, that'd probably be it. But no, there's been nothing like outlandish. Like, you know, the game was it the 18-19 season? They lost like 9-1 to Pittsburgh.
I remember that night.
Yeah, I think James Neal had the only goal in that game. For some reason, I remember that. But
fitting.
But yeah, no, there haven't been a lot of, you know, crushing losses to speak of.
Posts. Have you seen how many posts that we've hit this year?
I don't want to talk about it. It's like me playing pickup.
Ryan Pike.
And I want to qualify that by saying, if a goaltender doesn't show up and the objective of the game is to hit the post, I will never hit it. But if a goaltender's in the net, I will miss the net or hit the post 9 out of 10 times.
We're league-wide, the Flames are 4th in posts/crossbars hit.
Who is counting that stat?
I don't know. Ryan Pike reported it. I know he's not feeding us a line.
God.
He's not.
I'm sure it's true. I'm sure it's true.
And thank you, Ryan, for the info here. But the Rangers have 44, Washington has 42, Florida has 41, and Calgary has 40. Tyler Toffoli is tied for 3rd in the NHL with 8. Ovechkin and Trocheck have 10, and McDavid has 9.
It's so funny, yet I'm so angry that this is a counting stat in the NHL. I had no idea.
It's a good stat. I actually like it. I actually follow it a whole lot more.
It's a great conversation piece. Definitely a good way to get somebody going.
I saw that, and I'm like, ooh, we got to talk about that in the show, because there has been a lot of posts. And those are one of the things I always look at as, those are trends that change. They mathematically change.
Well, it's like the shot volume. Like, you know, Calgary's not going to put up 45 shots and score one goal a game for half a season. Like, it is going to correct itself. It has to.
So if we both agree that we both think we're turning a corner, albeit slowly, what do we need to see change in the new year now that will solidify us a playoff spot?
Fix the lines.
You know what I say, number one? This team will never make the playoffs unless we can get our power play going. We're at 18.9%. That's 27th in the National Hockey League.
Brutal. You have to, your special teams have to be, generally speaking, in the top half of the league. If that means you're 12th in the PP and 13th in the PK, that's still really good. Mm-hmm. You know, like winning the special teams battle is huge, but to me, it's the 5-on-5 part. I agree with you about the power play, but the 5-on-5 part is that's got to be fixed. You can't have Lucic on the scoring line.
So I agree. Let's talk about that. Who, and this is my, where we're going to end up arguing, which we usually do, but who do you put in that spot where Lucic is at right now?
Literally anybody. Well, I like.
Well, I'm with you on that too.
Yeah, I like the backline line.
I wouldn't screw with that line at all.
No, there's no need to. Although Mangiapane on that line would make sense. The thing is backline Coleman can elevate pretty well anybody. So
then they need Mangiapane with them because that guy's been a turd this year.
Well, and maybe he needs to be on a scoring line to get a few goals to find his confidence, right? So maybe that's a short term fix, but. Apart from that, internally, I don't know there's another great option. I still think Matthew Phillips, there's just a chance on the scoring line for a game or two just to see how he meshes with some other skilled players. But outside of that, I think the number one, it's not so much about who you put there, it's who you don't have there in this case. Like, less is more. Don't put Lucic in the scoring line. You know, try somebody else. And they've done some pretty ridiculous things. Trevor Lewis isn't a scorer either. He's having a decent year by his scoring standards. But
I think Trevor Lewis, if he was on the show right now, would say, I'm a fourth liner in this team. And I think sure he's wonderful on this. I look at that spot, Lucic's spot, and the only guy that really stands out to me that would be like plug and play would be Rosicka. But I am so mad at his game the last week that I wouldn't give him the spot. I'd rather have him sitting in the press box.
Is that because of the inherent laziness we've heard so much about and we're now seeing a bit of?
It's he's so frustrating to me because I look at his size of his body, and I'd give my right arm to be able to play a game with that size. Mm-hmm. And I look at his talent. When he has the puck, he's a talented hockey player. He is. Yep. But it just seems like you have to have a fire on his ass the whole game to get production out of him. He's kind of like, I kind of relate it back to my kid. It's like if he got a goal in the first 5 minutes of the game, it's going to be one hell of a good game. But if he didn't, it's going to be a hell of a long game. And I feel like that's a peewee problem that we're watching in the National Hockey League, and it bothers me. It bothers me because I was
watching my nephew play last night, and it's the same kind of thing. Like, I think he's quite young; he's 9 years old, but I think he could be quite good at hockey if he'd apply himself more. He just doesn't get the guts to play, and that's been the criticism of Rosicka, you know, since before he was drafted when he played for Sarnia. He has all the tools to be an effective player, to score, a big body like you talked about, and just the mental side of it just doesn't seem to be there often enough. And it must drive Daryl Sutter crazy because I'm sure he just drools when he sees this kid. And then he puts him out there. He has a game like the last few that he's had. And it's like, oh my God, like, would you do something?
I honestly, right now, I would sit him in the press box and I would call up Connor Zary and put him in that spot. Not in that spot on the fourth line. I'd put him in Lou Teacher. One of those two I'd put in in the spot where, Lucic is right now, and
those guys, the reason being, and I think this is where you're going with this, is that they have very, very high compete levels. Jacob Pelletier would not be an NHL player based on skill alone. He has a very high compete level.
Yeah.
So, and Connor Zary is similar. I think Zary is a little more skilled than Pelletier.
That's why I feel like he might have a better chance of sticking with Sutter.
Yeah, very possibly. But either one of those guys, I think, would be a good experiment. And I think also because the team is slowly turning that corner, one of the best things you could do is throw somebody in the lineup that really wants to be there and wants to play his ass off.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the point. Because especially this time of year, like, it's the weather's shitty. It's, you know, the holidays just ended. It's kind of the dog days of January. Like, get somebody in there that really wants to be there and kind of light a fire and that's the team.
Last night I heard the comment multiple times on social media, passengers. And I think there was some passengers last night, and I don't even think I need to name them for people to guess who they were. But
nope, not at all.
You can't have passengers if you're going to move up the standings. And I don't know that you're as concerned about him as I am, but Andrew Mangiapane is. I'm concerned. I'm concerned, and not.
I'm very concerned at this point.
You want to know why I'm the most concerned, though? He's doing dumb stuff. Like, what, okay, he's always been a grits and grimy player. I call him, you know, just kind of the dirty guy and just gets in the rough areas. But like last year he did that and scored, but he wasn't the guy that's like trying to start scrums and shit. And now all of a sudden his last 3 weeks, it's like he's trying to be this tough guy and I don't get it. And you know what?
I think he's frustrated himself, honestly.
I do too. And that's what I think it's a sign of. I think it's a sign of, oh shit, I got to live up to this contract. I got to do something. I'm not hitting the score sheet. I got to do something.
Yeah.
It scares me.
So. The next step for him, like, I don't know. It's hard because I don't think the Flames have a ton of organizational depth, but I mean,
no.
I'm getting to the point where I'm not opposed to him sitting for a game.
I'm not either.
You never want to see it come to that, but.
Here's a stat that's crazy. He's on pace this year for 14.7 goals. He's on pace for 19 assists and 34 points. If you look at his year stats, the previous 2 years, take last year's year out, he's right on pace for his career.
Wow.
Last year was his 1 year, obviously. He had 55 points in 82 games. He's on pace for his career average. That scares me. I pray to God last year wasn't a one-off. I pray to God.
Well, that's the scary thing, especially when they have expiring contracts in those years, right? I mean, a lot of guys do that, have a career year when the contract comes up, but when the whole team, everybody's having career years, it kind of masks it, right?
Yeah.
And actually, what it makes me think of, this is years ago now, but when the Bruins walked away from Dmitry Krstic. Yeah. Arbitration, and the Leafs signed them, and the Bruins were absolutely right to walk away because he was awful, and they knew it. And I don't think that Mangiapane is necessarily, you know,
no, I'm not.
Same boat.
I'm not hitting the full panic button. I am worried, but I'm not hitting the panic button.
No, but this guy should be, based on his opportunity and skill level, he should be a 50-some-year point player. I don't see him hitting the 70s and 80s ever, but and maybe I'm wrong about that, but it's very concerning that his career year is such an outlier.
I'm surprised he hasn't faced more criticism, to be honest with you. Because.
Oh, the team has a few lightning rods, right? So the Huberto contract has to live up to Lucic, you know. So he's kind of sheltered a bit by other guys Lucic. On that team. Yeah.
Every year, it's funny, this fan base, and it's not just Calgary, it's everyone, has a whipping boy. And we went from Brody to Bennett to, you know, we've, Monahan last year, like we find a new person to rip on every year, and this year it's Lucic, which I guess if you're gonna rip away, I guess. But I don't know. Those are things I think that need to change. Do you ever, you know, this Lucic thing that you bring up? I couldn't agree with you more. Do you ever wonder, like, is that spot a placeholder for a guy they're trading for?
Pretty terrible placeholder, but
well, no.
I mean, yeah, it could be. I don't know what they got in the works. They're gonna have to do something here soon, but I shouldn't say they have to. Again, like, things are generally trending in the right direction, but
a dream come true to me. This is my New Year's wish. This would be a dream come true, but that he brought up a Pelche or Azari, and they fit that spot with Kadri and Huberto and produced. And Shillington came back. And that way we wouldn't have to make a big deadline move, because I don't know how we do a deadline move looking at contract space next year and even contract space this year. We're going to have to give up a really good asset and get this run, and that's all.
Yeah, pretty well. I mean, to this point, True Living's done a pretty good job of managing the cap. I mean, apart from a few faux pas, Troy Brouwer, but generally speaking, he's managed the cap pretty well. So I think the competitive window for this team is what we've talked about before. It is definitely right now, but who would have thought we'd have the summer we had, right? In terms of recovering from the loss of those great players. So
does it bother you a little bit that the only coach or upper management that has a contract for next year extension is Sutter? True Living does not have a contract extension yet. And I believe he deserves one. I do. And this team may not win this year, but from what he did last summer and how he salvaged what could have been a disaster, I don't know.
Well, the biggest thing, having a competitive team is one thing, but also icing a team with marketable players is another. And he still managed to do that despite losing some, right? Yep. So I think he deserves an extension, but to answer your question, yeah, I do find that a little bit concerning. I do think True Living gets a short-term extension because this is like, okay, you managed to pivot from a potential disaster. What's next? Another first or second round loss, a deeper run, like, are we going to go back into a rebuild potentially? Well, that seems unlikely, obviously, at this point, but where do we go next? But I mean, it's Sutter's age. The fact he has a contract bound this year doesn't concern me a whole hell of a lot. And realistically, if they go in a different direction, they have to pay him out. They have to pay him out. But it's going to be really – this season is going to be very telling. It's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens in terms of management after this season.
I don't know. Maybe people that listen to this might think I'm crazy, but I don't necessarily – yeah, I don't necessarily like the position that we're sitting in currently. I'd rather be sitting in second place in the Pacific. But I'll tell you what, this team makes the playoffs. I sure as hell wouldn't want to play them.
No, definitely not. Nope, definitely not. And I think with, especially with guys like Kadri and Coleman, Lindholm and Backlund, there are some phenomenal two-way players in this team that would be an absolute nightmare to play against in a playoff series.
And I don't doubt, I mean, Markstrom can steal a series. He is sure fully capable.
You know what? I think Dan Vladera could too if he had to.
I think so too.
I really do. I don't have any concerns about the goaltending of this team whatsoever. And also should point out that Dustin Wolf was just named AHL again, you know, goaltender of the month, whatever it was. He's like, his stats are just insane.
He's insane at every level.
Yeah, he is a seventh round pick. He's already panned out beyond our wildest dreams. So
very much so. We'll be back to preview this week in Flames games.
Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com.
Three big games for the Flames this week as we head into the weekend. The next matchup, the New York Islanders come into the Saddle Dome Friday evening. The Islanders fifth in the Metro with 46 points in the final wildcard spot in that Eastern Conference. The second of two meetings this year, the Islanders beat the Flames 4-3 in overtime on the 7th, and the good news with this game is the Islanders will be coming off a back-to-back against the Edmonton Oilers as they are in Edmonton on Thursday night, so hopefully Edmonton can knock them around and the Islanders can win, and then we'll get a tired Islanders come Friday night. We'll see how that all works.
It'll be a pissed-off Oilers team, too, because they were terrible last night in their loss, so
very
that should bode well for the Flames as well.
Yep, it should. Then Sunday, Calgary hits the road. Heading out east, well, not out east, out to the central, I guess.
Yeah, east-ish.
East-ish, yeah. They're in Chicago on Sunday night. I hate Sunday night games. Chicago last in the central, only 20 points, 8 wins. Winners of just one of their last 10. This has got a must-win written all over it. This is the first of three meetings with the Blackhawks this year. And then Tuesday, we do another two-game stint in a town. Last time we did it in San Jose, we're doing it in St. Louis this time as Calgary heads to St. Louis on Tuesday. St. Louis currently fifth in the Central with 39 points, 3 points out of a wild card spot, and I have no idea what direction the St. Louis Blues are going because
they don't either.
They thumped us in our first of three meetings, 5-2 in December. I don't know what to make of the Predators this year. I don't know what to make of the Blues this year. So that'll be an interesting one as we play a Tuesday, Thursday in St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be very telling. I mean, the Blues obviously have a lot of really good players, and I think they're kind of lost right now, but I could see them turning it on and stealing a wild card spot, just as they did earlier in the year. They started off terribly, came on really strong, they faltered again. So it's strange, though. Again, you know, two games in the same city, much like the San Jose set that you mentioned. So I'm not sure. Whoever did this schedule that has the Oilers and Flames not playing in 2023 through this part of the season and then having two games against the same team in the same city twice, and maybe again, but twice so far is just odd to me.
It is odd, and I know it's one of the COVID things that a lot of teams said that they liked about was the three-game sets or the two-game sets, but I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I guess if I was going to do it, I'd just like it on back-to-back nights and get it done and get them out. But it is less travel. This is a key, important road trip. like we've said 50 times, we're in the dog days of the season, and this is where the team needs to make hay. And when you're playing teams that are lower in the standings like the Blackhawks and the Blues, points need to be earned on those nights.
Yep, 100%. 100%. So we'll have to see how it goes. The Islanders should be a good test, but hopefully no letdowns against the Blackhawks, and then a couple games against the Blues, then come back for a home stretch. It's time to make hay, right?
It is definitely time to make hay. We are back again next week with another episode of Flames Unfiltered. Kyle and I will both be back for an hour of Flames hockey talk next week. Check us out on all the major podcast players. You can watch the video on YouTube. Get on over to flamesunfiltered.com for all the past episodes. Have a good week, Flames fans. We're back next week talking Flames.
Take care, guys.
Connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. Check out the Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Host Brad Brood is on Twitter at Brad Brood, and host Kyle Lewis is on Twitter at VanLewis14. Like what you hear? Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Flames Unfiltered can be found on all the major podcast players. Want to watch the show? You got it. Check out Inside Edge Hockey Media Group for every show. Subscribe while you watch. Thanks for listening, watching, and interacting. Enjoy the hockey action.
The wind comes! Play on! Yeah, baby! Play on! Yeah, baby!
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk. This episode of Flames Unfiltered was copyrighted and produced by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.